prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, where we discuss underseen horror movies, specifically those which have fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Erica.
I'm Lance.
And this episode, we have a special guest. We have Ivan Paychev, who is the head archivist for AGFA, or the American Genre Film Archive, as well as the man behind Bat City Cinema here in Austin. Welcome, Ivan.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
So can you tell folks, let's start with AGFA. Can you tell folks a little bit about what it is you do for AGFA?
Well, essentially, my title at AGFA is head of film archive. So that means I'm basically in charge of the film archive part of AGFA. Yeah, we have a film archive arm, our home video arm, and our theatrical distribution arm. So I'm in charge of all the actual film elements. Most of what I do is print inspections. We ship out prints to theaters all over the place. And I also do all the scanning work for AGFA, because we do lots of restorations, not only for us, but for other companies like Severin and Arrow and things like that. And so I do all the scanning of elements for various restorations.
Awesome. Nice. So like the Doris Wishman box set, did you go through all those? And
I did some of those scans. Yeah, a lot of that restoration work was done before I started doing that part of things. Yeah, but I did some of that.
So Bat City Cinema, you have a double feature that are you physically going with them, or are you just sending them out to the different theaters that are
physically going. Yeah, this awesome. Is a tour, basically. Yeah, I will be taking my double feature of Satan War and a obscure TV movie from 1977 called Spectre around to several different theaters on the West Coast, along with shorts and trailers and, you know, other just kind of random weird 16mm stuff that I've found over the years.
Yeah. So back in January, you actually brought this double feature to Spider House here in Austin.
It did, yes. Yeah,
so I was there. Me and my boyfriend John were there in the front row. A couple other people were there. But so folks in Austin are going to have another chance to see this double feature, because your first stop is at Austin Film Society on June 3rd.
It is, yes. And this will actually be a slightly different show than the one I did at Spider House. The two features will be the same.
Right.
Everything else will be different.
Oh,
all the pre-show between stuff.
Okay.
Yeah,
different.
I already got my tickets.
I'm great. So
well, I originally wasn't. I was like, well, I already saw it. It's fine. But now if you're telling me it's got different stuff in there, then yeah, I'm going to go again.
Plus there's a bit of a stage show element this time that I wasn't really able to do at the last show.
Okay.
The last show, unfortunately, suffered from being the day after Austin went to stage 5 COVID precautions.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't really.
Is the stage show going on tour? Is it just for Austin Film Society?
No, it'll be the whole tour.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
Sweet.
I mean, it's not like a big elaborate show, but you know, it's
a little
hosting bit kind of thing that I do.
That sounds awesome. So for folks who aren't here in Austin that can't go to that, you've got 5 other chances. So we've got Thursday, June 16th at the Frida Cinema in Santa Ana, California. Friday, June 17th at Whammy VHS and Micro Cinema in Echo Park. Sunday, June 19th at the Balboa Theater in San Francisco. That's also Father's Day, so give your father the gift of Satan. Bring him along. Saturday, June 25th at the Grand Illusion Theater in Seattle. And then Sunday, June 26th at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have links to all of those shows and where you can get tickets in our show notes. We'll also put that on social when we post the episode. So folks can easily do that and see this wonderful double feature, because I saw it. I can vouch for it. I'm going to see it again.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, listeners, if it's coming to your town, I say grab a ticket, even buy a ticket if you can't go, just support AGFA any way you can. Yeah, like you can go to the donate page. But yeah, I'm really excited about the show, Ivan.
Cool. Awesome.
So we're not just here to talk about Satan, though. Well, maybe we could argue Ograff is a little bit in league with Satan, but we are here to talk mainly about the no-budget French slasher Ograff from 1983. So this was directed, produced, and written by N.G. Mount, or Norbert George Mautier. This isn't his only film, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's probably his only film worth watching.
Yeah, I watched two other films. I'm just even trying to remember the... So I watched Trepanator, which was his take on Reanimator.
That's fun.
It was fun. It's like Herbert East is the name.
It's
exactly what you kind of expect. That was the better of the two. The other one I watched was... What was it? You watched it too. Operation Las Vegas.
Yeah, that one was like... It felt like a... Godfrey Ho movie in a way, but like the main girl was really channeling her inner Diane Thorne in that one. So I don't know. I liked it, but
yeah, it's all about Ograff. I mean, that's like, if there's one movie to look at or to watch, this is his. Cause Trepanator, I had a lot of fun with. That was made, I think it was a 92 or 93.
Yeah. 93 or 90. That was 92, as well as Alien Platoon, which was another one that I watched, but that one, the only one that I watched that had subs was Operation Las Vegas. The other three that I watched of his didn't have subs. So it was kind of like, what am I watching? But it's easy enough to follow along with what's going on. Like Dinosaur from the Deep was kind of his Sound of Thunder movie. But it's funny because like Jean Roland is in a few of his movies as well. Yeah. And then there's another cameo in Trepanator, which I pointed out to you, and you found him in Trepanator, Bill Lustig.
Oh yeah, Bill Lustig. Yeah, he has a scene where he goes to the doctor and he's having these nightmares. And I guess, you know, N.G. Mount recorded this nightmare sequence that Bill Lustig is having, and it's just this maniac cop, like poorly done maniac cop nightmare, like, and it's haunting Bill Lustig's dreams. So he's trying to get help from these nightmares that he's having. But early 90s. So as soon as he was on screen, I knew it was him. And then he started saying, like, there were subtitles there. There were French subtitles, but it said like maniac cop or no, they called it nightmare cop.
Nightmare cop. Yeah.
It's worth watching for sure. It's fun. But yeah, all these are in French. You don't really need subtitles, like Erica said.
Yeah. I mean,
for the most part.
I don't know that having that would have enhanced anything for me. I don't know. I just kind of treated it as a different experience. I mean, I've watched plenty of like Hong Kong movies without subtitles and been able to follow along pretty well. And it's fine.
I've watched movies with the title right on.
Yes, Portrait in Crystal. I think the only problem is that, so something like Ograff, which has barely any dialogue at all, I think maybe like 8 or 9 total lines, versus these other ones that didn't have subtitles, but it's very heavy on dialogue. So then you kind of lose something there. So it would have been nice if something.
That's why Ograff works so well.
Yeah.
Really.
Are these other films also shot on Super 8 like Ograff was?
Yeah, they're definitely either Super 8 or a shot on video or a mixture of both again. So even like the latest one he did was 94, and that they're all very clearly like definitely shot on video or Super 8 or combined.
I didn't try and figure out if it was Super 8, but it's definitely rough looking.
Yeah.
Man, I got to see these.
They're all on YouTube. I mean, the two I watch are on YouTube. So I think most of his stuff might be. I read some stuff on the director, N.G. Mount, which I found completely fascinating, which, you know, he owned and operated a video shop.
Right.
In Orléans, France. And, you know, he sold VHS tapes, DVDs, comic books. But I was fascinated that there was a 15 year period in his life from 1946 to 1960, where he pumped out like thousands of hand drawn comic books.
Oh,
and these were all kind of from licensed characters, like his take on Lone Ranger was one, Zorro, but he was infatuated with the Phantom. you know, the purple suited Phantom,
yeah.
Billy Zane, you know, from the movie.
Yeah.
And he did thousands and thousands. And this professor, I found out, I was doing a lot of Google translating because all these like articles were in French.
Okay.
But this professor from the art school and design of Orléans, France, his name is Xavier Girard. He came across in a flea market, like a collection of pretty much all this original art from NG Mound. So he started to exhibit it within the last year, and he's going to bring it to the States, he said, within, you know, 2023.
Oh, shit.
But I was looking at his art, and it's just fascinating because he was like 5 years old to about 20 when he was making, he was just pumping out these comics, and he would sell them at his shop. And just, I'm completely fascinated by wanting to see some of these exhibitions if they come to the States.
Yeah.
Because they were like, I read that there's two lined up like in Paris for later this year, like in September and October. And I don't know. I was really interested in the amount of art that it seems like NG Mount was just kind of devoting his whole life to, was being some sort of creative, which is good.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm with you. I hope it comes to the States. I want to see that.
Definitely Google the, Google is, I guess you could Google, he called him the demon, the Phantom, but it's just a straight ripoff of the Phantom. Like it's these black and white comics, but he did these marker and watercolor covers mm-hmm. that are just, I don't know. It looks kind of Daniel Johnston looking, like his art is kind of real, you know, kind of crude and cartoony, but it still makes a lot of sense in sequentials, and it's cool.
Okay.
I'm going to tweet some shit out probably to show. And if you read French, you know, explain some of this stuff to me, because I don't think Google Translate is 100%, obviously.
No, I found that a lot. So the cast for Ogroff, Howard Vernon, his name is first billed, but he only shows up at the very last minute, and he shows up as a vampire, and he's got the most lines in the film. So I guess it works for that. There are a couple of other cast members who are in some of his other films, like Christophe Lemaire. He's credited as a zombie in Ogroff. He also was in a couple of Mount's other films, like Alien Platoon, Trepanator, and the Edgar Allan Poe Syndrome. And then Alain. It is a good title. The movie's not really very good, though. It promised a lot as far as like a super soldier gets loose and gets super horny. And then it's just literally just this one platoon just chasing after him through the woods. But you don't actually see the alien. You just see the five chasing after him, and they just kind of die off.
So what's the one by one? What's the Edgar Allan Poe
title? Oh, I didn't watch that one.
Oh, okay. I thought we were talking about, sorry.
No. The Alien Platoon one was that okay. one. I don't know what I didn't watch the Edgar Allan Poe Syndrome one, because I had had my fill of no sub NG Mount movies for the week. So stopped there. All right. And then Alain Petit was also in Jean Roland's Zombie Lake and a few Jess Franco films, including Tender Flesh and Midnight Party. And that's really it for cast and crew. It's not really much to go into, because there's just so much to talk about the movie itself, about Ogroff. So, Ivan, when was the first time that you watched Ogroff? Do you remember?
Oh, boy. Long time ago, many years ago, I used to work at Scarecrow Video way back. And
yeah.
That was where I first discovered that. I actually have rewatched it recently, though. So it's kind of fresh
yeah.
in my mind still.
Was it like a VHS copy that you had?
No, it was that DVD that came out a while ago in 2016 or something like that, the restoration.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can call it that. Yeah, the first time I watched it, and this is completely my fault, is I, you know, would turn it on before I was going to bed. I was like, oh, this, you know, something to watch before I go to sleep. And it took me about five sittings to finish it, because mainly because of that, like, drolling synth would just kind of lull me to sleep. But I found that the next time I watched it, I enjoyed it so much more. I didn't need to like pause and like, I need a break from Ogroff for a second. It actually moves a lot more quickly watching it the next time. I actually enjoyed it a lot more, but also I wasn't like breaking it up and like going to bed like right after it and then dreaming of masked faces and axes, axe masturbation and all of that stuff. So
yeah, birds chirping. Because yeah, this was shot on Super 8, and obviously didn't have the budget or the proper audio equipment So everything's kind of dubbed and these sound effects are added, and the synth by Jean Richard. The sounds are a big part of this movie. I mean, the soundtrack is too. It's completely like you said, it's like this just never ending drone. All the sounds that are added are kind of sounds of terror. There's a lot of nature, like birds chirping, like I said, a lot of howling wind, which is really cool. But when you get to the scenes of victims being killed and screaming, it's just this overkill of yelling and another Al Passeri like callback. Like it's almost like these reused sound effects of people yelling just over and over again in these movies.
Yeah. It's disconcerting, but it's also like oddly comforting in a way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm happy when I watch it.
Is Al Passeri the same guy who directed Mummy Theme Park?
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Yeah. So have you seen Fantastic Games?
No.
That one is fantastic.
It's nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great Christmas time movie. It's his kids movie, but it's also not a kids movie in that way. So that one's fantastic. We did one of Lance's picks was Plankton or Creatures from the Abyss. And we watched all of his movies for it. And
he has a website too that you should check out.
Oh yeah.
Oh really?
He builds like these animatronic sculptures of like, I don't know, like chimpanzees playing the trumpet and stuff. And
talking parrots and like he did like a Jurassic Park one. Like it's fun. You can get lost on his site watching his videos. All right. So I think, you know, one of the highlights of this film and movies like this is always going to be the gore. And there's a lot to be had in this. I'd be hard pressed to pick a favorite kill in this. Lance, do you have any?
I mean, not really, like, because he goes about killing, and I mean, Ogroff does pretty much the same thing. He gets his little pickaxe and just kind of starts wailing on people and stabbing them. But he has no real logic to it. He'll have a girl and tie her up and then leave her out there for a while. And I don't know. I don't have a favorite kill.
Yeah.
What about you, Ivan? Do you have one that sticks out?
Oh, yeah. I guess not a kill, but the scene when he butchers the kid in front of the...
Oh, Ivan knows the way to my heart.
That scene is so great.
Where he saw in the head. Yeah.
And that comes like right, like at the very beginning, that kid gets it. And then, I'm like, okay, well, the kid's dead. That's great. But then like we get later, the kid gets chopped to pieces and I'm like, yes.
It's so great. Ogroff. Like not only is killing kids really kind of the last taboo in horror movies, but it goes that extra mile to watch him then mutilate the kid's dead body.
Yes, exactly. It's not just like, oh, he's dead and like just drag his body off.
It's a to be continued murder. Pause. We're coming back to this.
I do love it. I think one of my other favorite ones is, not to say that there's any sort of clear linear plot to the, I mean, there is sort of when it gets into like the romantic quote unquote aspect of it. But one of my favorites is there's absolutely no setup for this, but Ogroff just pops out of the trunk of this orange car with like, we don't even know where that car came from, how he got in there, anything. He just pops out and just kills someone.
Yeah.
I love it.
I feel like Ogroff is like the beginning when the car pulls over, there's a ball that like is thrown out of the window and the kid runs out. I feel like at that moment, it's like these perfect set of events are set in motion and it opens this portal of this nightmare. And Ogroff's like everybody's nightmare. So he's just popping out, you know, maybe the driver has this nightmare that Ogroff is, or there's a killer in her trunk. And when she opens it, he pops it out. That weird scene where in the beginning where the lady's running for like 15 minutes from Ogroff.
Yeah.
And then a car of clowns pulls up. Yeah. And, you know, clowns are terrifying to so many people. It's like all these nightmares were just unleashed at the very beginning. And it's like haunting like all these people. And it makes no sense, but it's just terrifying to very specific people, you know?
I can see that. Cause yeah, I can, you know, driving by yourself as a woman out in the middle of nowhere, you look around, everything is safe. And then you open your trunk and I can see that.
Yeah. I mean, that clown scene is just too much. I love it. But another one of my favorite kills too, which again has nothing really, maybe it does with the story, but the guy who's hanging with the No Love t-shirt in the forest, and then Ogroff's soon to be girlfriend or partner finds him and, you know, she cuts him down and starts checking his pockets. He comes to life and she's like, oh, well, I'm going to finish this job for you. And she starts like tying, you know, stabbing him, then grabs a gun, tying his head to the bumper of her, tying a rope to the bumper of her car to his head and driving off to rip his head off. Like, yeah. That kills. Like, is this ever going to end?
Yeah. Well, then she takes a rock and like smashes his head too. Yeah. Just to be double bashes, sure.
When once it's off. Yeah. That's a great kill too.
Yeah. But Ogroff doesn't just commit violence against people. He also commits violence against cars.
Oh, yeah. That's a crazy scene.
It's one of my favorites because, you know, there's these campers, they're just hanging out, they're playing chess, and you get this fake out Ogroff, like an old man with an axe that comes up to them, and, you know, you think they're safe, but then no, Ogroff just jumps out of nowhere, jumps on their chess table, starts smashing shit, kills all of them. The girl gets trapped in the car and Ogroff just goes to town on the car for like 2 or 3 minutes straight. Like
literally ripping the engine from under the hood and like picking it up and throwing it away. Mm-hmm. Have y'all ever smashed a car with a sledgehammer?
It's very satisfying.
It is. No, it's exhilarating.
I've not done that.
I'm trying to remember when I did. I was very young. It was probably like at Rio Fest or something with Boy Scouts or something stupid. But yeah, it's like terrifying and exhilarating at the same time. And it's something I always think about. Like, I don't know if that's a bad thing to do, to have kids do, but to always think about smashing cars, that's what I want to do for a while.
Was this some sort of Boy Scout, like, bonding exercise? You'll get together and smash a car.
It might have been like a car. Yeah, it was basically like you get a ticket to, I vaguely remember it, but I remember the feeling and grabbing the sledgehammer and just kind of, I probably was like 8 or 9 or something. So I wasn't doing as much damage as I thought I was in my head as a kid. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I want to do it again, like in my 40s. Like I want to do it all the time.
I was in the wrong Boy Scout troop.
I said Boy Scouts. It probably wasn't. It might have been like at Rio, like in the Valley of Rio Fest, or I don't know. It was something, but there were a lot of young kids doing it.
Mine was as a teenager, because I told you I grew up in the high desert back in California, and there's fuck all to do there. And so you go and party out in the middle of the desert.
Oh, so this was an abandoned car?
Like, oh, yeah. It was an abandoned car. And it was at this place that we would normally go to, you know, drink and party or whatever. And then one night, I don't remember who decided, but we called it, we were going to have a sledgehammer party. So everyone had to bring like some kind of something, crowbar, sledgehammer, whatever.
Peter Gabriel soundtrack.
Hell yeah. Then we got drunk and just went to town on this fucking car.
That sounds great.
That was fun.
Like at that age. Yeah. I was too young to really appreciate it, but yeah, it's a good memory. I definitely recommend it.
Just, you know, don't do it to someone's working vehicle, folks. That's not nice. I mean, unless it's someone who deserves
it'll
it.
It'll be
I
a
guess.
Perk on the road for Satan Gideon. Just go to the parking lot and one lucky person's going to have to
smash the car.
Yeah, there you go. What else, Lance? What do you got in your notes that you want to talk about?
Ogroff.
Yeah.
So he has like, I mean, you brought up, I think the masturbating with this pickaxe. Mm-hmm. He has like these, I'm not going to say that's a childlike trait, but you know, everybody does it, but he has these childlike mannerisms.
Yeah.
Like when he's sitting at home alone, he picks up the slingshot and he has the BB gun and he's just like celebrating when he shoots like a little toy off of his table. Yeah. Giving him this childlike mannerisms and traits is, I don't know. I found that really interesting for that character. And I know it's been done with, you know, like Leatherface is kind of like a child too.
And Jason and
I feel like that's what they were going through, but I don't know. That scene in the house is one of my favorites because it also shows like how he lives, you know, with all the bones and stuff, but there's weird stuff all over his walls. You know, there's like nude photographs of like women and stuff, posters and centerfolds, but there's all these political magazines. I don't know if you guys saw that. It's called, Match Magazine, which is kind of like the was France's equivalent of Time magazine for the States. And it had all these French military people that I kept kind of zooming in on. So I don't know what the message was there, but yeah, it had all these like generals, French military generals from the 30s and 40s on the wall. You know, this is me just overthinking stuff.
Sure.
Like maybe his parents were involved in the war and they died in the war or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's some, you know, NG Mount had some sort of idea there.
Yeah. I do like
just visuals.
I did like the shed inside, cause it felt like, what was his name? The guy who did the set design for Texas Chainsaw, Robert Burns.
Yeah.
So it felt like that, like light, like there's like four or five bones hanging. It's not like full TCM or anything like
right.
that. But I was like, oh, he's going for a little Texas Chainsaw in that shed.
Yeah. And then that thing outside too, where the girl was staked to with like the skulls on top mm-hmm. too. That kind of looked like the opening
of the cemetery. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Have you been there? It's not that far from here.
I've never gone.
Yeah. It was hard to actually find the exact angle of like where it was, because you had to like look at the picture from TCM and then be like, okay, here's, okay, there's like the shot from Texas Chainsaw,
right.
like there.
Have you been out there?
I have, yeah. Yeah, I've been there. I've been to the gas station and the mm-hmm. house. Yeah.
And the gas station now is kind of like,
it's like a little touristy thing.
Yeah, like you can
yeah, they turn the inside into like a Hot Topic.
So. Yeah, it's like cool, but yeah, it's like they just sell like Freddy and Jason stuff in there. It's
Chucky
weird.
Dolls
yeah,
and
Chucky
stuff.
Dolls and things like that.
And the barbecue, honestly, isn't that great.
No, it's not.
So yeah, it's not. It's like it was great, like seeing the outside of it and like
yeah.
taking a picture of that. And they had the van there. But yeah, they built like some little like mini cabins in the back to go.
Oh yeah, I have
like
seen
you can stay overnight there. And my ex-husband and I did that for our anniversary 1 year. It was fucking miserable. So. I really hope that place does well, but
I'm sure it does. like they probably sell a lot of like Jason
yeah.
plush dolls.
Oh, yeah. The house does well. It's a restaurant now, and John and I went there, it was packed, so I'm
nice.
Like yeah, it's doing really well. And they have a little, you can go upstairs, and they've got some TCM stuff up there, so you know, they're embracing it.
The thing that was weird about that though, at least when I went there, was that all the TCM stuff they had was from the 2003 remake.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't have anything from the original movie there.
Yeah. They're trying.
Any way to make a buck. You know that?
Yeah. Okay. So one of the other things that that I like about this is just the repetitiveness of this, mm-hmm. like, especially when it comes to the first woman. I think her name's Leticia, because that's whose name gets called at the very beginning with the guy and the kid and the woman. She runs off and like she keeps running into Ogroff, and then she gets away. And then she finds there's this one scene where she's at this crossroads and it's like looking down this road, looking down this road, looking down this road, looking down this road. And she sees a guy on a bike and she starts approaching him. And I'm like, it's clearly Ogroff. What are you doing? And so he captures her again, but then she gets away again. But then she gets caught again because she runs into him in the woods. And that's when she gets tied to a cross. She gets her tongue cut out. And then Ogroff leaves her. But then he comes back and he does this like little skipping dance around her. And
yeah.
then he just like starts hacking at her. And then there's a shot from behind her and he cuts off her arm and just lops off. And
yeah, it's like a nightmare come to life.
Yeah,
like
the thing I love about that particular character, that lady, is that from the time when she gets out of the car and encounters Ogroff to the time where she's totally butchered, she has almost no expression on her face until she goes into Ogroff's house and like gets some blood on her hands.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, like just horrified for like a full 30 seconds. But like everything else, she's just like, oh.
Yeah, I love that shot. I love that little mystery of like Ogroff's like cutting meat up, and you know, thankfully he's giving his dog something to eat.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think human meat's really, I don't know. I haven't tried it, but probably.
I'm sure dogs love it.
I'm sure it's fine. But like, yeah, he's throwing meat into his cellar in the shack.
Yeah.
So there's this added layer of mystery, like, ooh, what's in there?
Yeah.
And then what you think is just a basic slasher film of some maniac in the woods then takes a turn into like a romantic element and then turns into a zombie film at the end. Ograph delivers on every level of everything.
It's a super weird flip. Like, I mean, Ograph is like the central character the whole first half, three quarters of the movie. But then, yeah, as soon as the woman opens up the cellar and all these zombies start coming out and they start rising from the ground, and the focus is then on them. And Ograph kind of becomes the hero, almost trying to stop them at that point, which is really strange. It's just this weird change in the whole dynamic. It's almost like he was keeping the worst of the nightmares at bay in a cellar, but then some girl, when he tries to be normal and in some lovely relationship, she kind of unleashes the worst to the world. I'm thinking deep here. I'm getting personal. But yeah, the weird shift in focus is weird. And then the end, even after that, it gets even stranger when
that word Vernon,
when Vernon Howard pops
back, backtracking a little bit. So the woman that Ograph has a relationship with, I assume, is Letitia's sister.
Okay.
Or relative.
I was wondering why she went out there.
Because there's a scene of her walking through the town, and then there's like two lines of dialogue of a voiceover, like, oh, well, you know, there's nothing to be done. Like, she's probably just wandering through the woods. So
I thought maybe because she walks upon that guy that hung himself and he says no love, you know, on his shirt. Like, I feel like that was almost a suicidal thing, like, because he had no love.
Yeah.
At first I thought, oh, she's going to the forest to kill herself. Like, that's a forest where people hang themselves.
I thought she was looking for Letitia.
That makes sense. Okay. That makes more sense.
I could be completely wrong, though, because there's no dialogue to support any of this except for like the two voiceover lines from some men that we never see. So I thought those were cops who were basically telling her, like, she's probably just out there wandering around. There's lots of trails and stuff. So whoever she is, she ends up at Ograph's shed because he captures her. He ties her up in the shack and then he strokes her hair, and he has this picture, this old picture of a woman who looks nothing like her, but Ograph seems to think that she does.
Right.
And then he unties her and takes her to the bed, and she's into it.
So yeah. They sleep together and spend the night together. And then she wakes up and starts like tidying up the place.
Yeah.
Like,
they're domesticated. I mean,
it's very strange.
Opposites attract.
Yeah. She likes a bad boy, and Ograph is the ultimate, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, she even stops him from killing. So you think like Ograph has turned a new leaf. Like, he sees this car and he's like, yeah, I gotta kill. And then she's like, no, Ograph. And then she pulls him away and okay.
So weird.
But she does let the zombies loose. There is kind of like a Day of the Dead moment in there too, where she's like up against the wall and the zombies, like the arms are coming out.
That's a great shot.
I love that. Yeah.
And that zombie too, he looked like he had like a helmet on, like a military helmet. Like, he almost looked like a zombie soldier stuck in the wall.
Oh yeah.
It could be.
Yeah. He did have a helmet on. Yeah.
It was weird.
But then, yeah, like you said, the zombies get loose, and then the girl, maybe sister, whoever she is, she takes off. She drives away and leaves Ograph. And he has this little moment where he's walking away from his shed and his like head is hanging down. He's kind of defeated. And I'm like, oh, poor Ograph.
I know. It's a weird fluctuation of like, okay, there's this mad mutilator, this killer going around just sawing the heads off of children. I mean, you know, you're cheering for him at that point, but a lot of people aren't. He's just this killer. And then all of a sudden he falls in love and he's, you know, battling these zombies, and he's becoming like this hero of some sorts.
He's a hero we all need.
It's like he's growing up, you know, because he's like this childlike, you know, guy, which really leads you to be sympathetic to him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then he's, you know, he finds love and all this stuff, and
he sleeps.
You know, like the progression of Ograph, you know, as a human being.
Yes.
As he murders people.
This is a very touching story. It's a coming of age movie.
And then he gets on a motorcycle and starts hacking zombies like while he's riding his motorcycle.
I mean, Ograph, he has, yeah, there's so many modes of transportation in this movie. Like, he's got his little bicycle and he's got, you know, he's tearing up cars. Maybe he only likes two-wheel vehicles because he destroys all cars.
I think maybe he doesn't like loud things, because there's that one moment where he meets the guy with the chainsaw in the woods, and they have the axe versus chainsaw fight, which obviously Ograph is going to win. And he does. And then after he kills the guy who had the chainsaw, he destroys the chainsaw with the axe. Like, I think he doesn't like loud noises like that.
Yeah, but then he gets on the motorcycle.
So. Yeah, and I just, yeah.
But then at that point, he's the man Ogroff. He's not the child Ogroff.
This is true.
So he's, yeah, he's grown at that point. Yeah, there's so many like elements. Like,
yeah,
such an ambitious movie, really.
Yeah,
because like, there's so many, you know, just like ultra low budget, you know, gory slasher things that, you know, people just make because they want to make it and all that. And they're just like, okay, you know, that was fun or whatever. But this one really, like, you can see that guy really tried to make something special, not just in little things like, you know, making Ogroff childlike so you sympathize with him and, you know, taking the story in weird directions with the zombies and stuff. But like, just like the way shots are framed, like the zombie coming out of the wall, grabbing the woman. Cause then in the foreground, you also have like the silhouetted zombie hands that are like coming up out of the bottom of the screen. And like, the scene where the guy gets axed in the face and it's the point of view from his blood covered eye.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, you can see his fingers going over it.
Yeah, then the blood's dripping like on the camera, like it's on him.
Yeah.
It's really, yeah, there's some cool effects and angles that he uses.
Yeah, some very artistic choices in that, which is strange considering what it is.
And the Super 8 really adds to that because you can't really tell if it's day, night, dusk, dawn. It's always this weird kind of time of day. Like you're stuck in this time of day. It's really weird looking to me. A very dreamlike.
In the Twilight Zone.
Yeah like exactly. That. It's just, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare.
It is. It's a nightmare. I love being inside of that. But so the end, we kind of talked about like, okay, Ogroff got on his motorcycle. He crashes his motorcycle. And that's when the zombie, I feel like the movie kind of slows down here a little bit because it's about 10 or 15 minutes of just watching zombies walk around for a while. And then like,
I like where they're kind of in the neighborhoods and the guy's like, with the, what are they called? Shears? He's cutting his.
Like the burning? Yeah.
I do like this. Starts walking through neighborhoods. Hedge clippers, thank you. Yeah. Where he's got the hedge clippers and they're just walking through neighborhoods. And that's like a fun scene.
Yeah.
I do agree though. I feel like I enjoyed the first half of the movie a lot more because it's way more like atmospheric and I'm kind of sucked in. And then when it gets so much more chaotic and just nuts, it's like you're trying to keep up, even though it's like 30 minutes of somebody running down a road,
right? But then we get to so Ogroff crashes his motorcycle and he's out of commission for a little while, like he's knocked out. And then the girl who ran away from him and left Ogroff behind, she crashes her car, but then she gets picked up by Howard Vernon,
who's a priest or something.
He's a priest.
Well, I mean, he's not only a priest. So he picks her up. She thinks she's safe, obviously. And he has this, you know, very Vernon Howard look in his eyes. You know, he's gonna do something creepy. First off, he's a priest, so you know it's gonna be creepy.
Well, of course, yeah.
But he keeps, you know, again, there's not much dialogue there. I think, you know, she knows something's up. He keeps driving, and he drags her out of the car, pulls over, drags her out of the car, and he turns into a vampire. And he bites her, and then the sun's coming up.
Yep.
And then I thought, oh, okay, shit, so he's gonna, you know, burst into flames. But no, he just gets in the car and drives away.
He's good. Yeah,
that's
Ogroff.
And then Ogroff, who was battling the zombies, also took an axe to the back,
right?
So the end shot is him walking. At this time you can see it looks like it's dusk or something.
Mm-hmm.
Great just still shot of him walking with an axe in his back, which I love so much.
Yeah.
Credits roll over that.
Leave it open for a sequel.
Yeah. But that ending is so bizarre. And it's, you know, it should be, because what you experienced the hour and a half, hour 25 minutes before, you need something that fucking knocks you off your feet.
And it does. Ivan, anything else you wanted to bring up?
My girlfriend, before we met years ago, dressed up as Ogroff for Halloween one year.
Hell yeah.
She cut up a deflated basketball to make the mask and like punch studs in it and stuff like that. Nobody had any idea who she was, but yeah, they all thought she looked real creepy, but they're like, what are you supposed to be?
Are you Mankind?
Yeah.
From WWE?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's amazing. I love it.
Did she have like little axe and stuff
too? She did. Yeah. And the overalls and stuff.
That's perfect. Yeah,
just good costume.
Big rubber boots.
Is that how you met her? You like recognize like,
this is the one. No. This we met years later.
Oh, okay.
Actually at Fantastic Fest.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
All right. So you're taking your double feature of Satan films on the road.
Uh-huh.
But we also do our double feature picks here. So movies that we think would pair well with Ogroff. So Ivan, what would you pair with Ogroff?
Devil's Story. Perfect. Hands down. It's like the ultimate double feature there.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so similar. You know, like the tone, and they just start out, you know, with the killer just terrorizing people in the French countryside. And then they both just get like super fucking weird.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah. So for folks, Devil's Story, we've talked about it a few times on this podcast. Vinegar Syndrome has a release of it. If you don't own it, wait, this is coming out after the sale. But anyway, just pick it up. You owe it to yourself.
It has mummies. It has
a galleon. It's got
horses.
A possessed horse.
That horse scene is so crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that double, I thought of Devil's Story too. And then I thought, okay, well, that's going to, I would love to watch these, you know, back to back. But that, those combinations, it'll try a lot of people's patience. Like,
oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
That's for the adventurous film watcher.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's a great,
I mean, our listeners are adventurous, so I think they can handle this.
It is the right pick.
Yeah.
For Ogroff.
100%. Yeah. What do you got though, Lance?
So I started thinking, because I did go down that little wormhole of the Phantom, and I thought, you know what? Let's just do Simon Winsor's Phantom with Billy Zane. And then I thought that wouldn't, and I thought, you know, nobody would understand that. Nobody would get it.
It's a deep cut.
Yeah. Let's not go there. I did think of Scary Tales, Doug Ulrich's Scary Tales, the anthology. I thought it could fit into that, but
yeah.
Ogroff's 100, you know, it's an hour and a half long. It's kind of a long movie. So I just settled on the dreamlike nightmare atmosphere of Ogroff. And I'm going with A Virgin Among the Living Dead. Jess Franco's 1973.
Yeah. Howard Vernon, too.
Yeah, Howard Vernon's in there as well. Also known as Christina, Princess of Eroticism. Although Franco preferred the original title, The Night of the Shooting Stars, which I wasn't aware of.
Hmm.
But yeah, this one is very atmospheric. Again, you do have the Vernon Howard tie-in. And you don't actually know if the main character, her name's Christina, is really seeing or just like dreaming what's happening around her. So, it's about her visiting some relatives in a small castle for the reading of her father's will, but all the people in the neighboring town she encounters mention that everyone living in that castle have been dead for some time. So is she really seeing the ghost of these estranged relatives, or, you know, are they zombies? So it has that same kind of element, like what's real and what's not for Ogroff. So I would pick this as like a dreamy, nightmarish French double feature. And then, yeah. Howard Vernon is also very creepy, and it is Uncle Howard.
He always is, though.
He's just got that look.
Yeah.
This one's streaming on Era Video, and there's a Kino Redemption Blu-ray out there of it. But I love this movie. What about you, America?
Yeah, I'm going very non-French and going with Tim Ritter's Truth or Dare, Critical Madness for double feature. So like Ogroff, it's kind of a series of murder set pieces strewn together by a very loose plot. You're just here for the gore and nonsense and the masks, if you will.
Yeah.
And another baby kill in that one too. So, you know, double feature of child kills and just serial killer nonsense.
Yeah. That's such a good one.
It's so good. Fucking masterpiece. Tim Ritter is, recent stuff, though, I cannot vouch for. I watched Sharks from the Corn, and
he did that.
Sharks from he the did corn. That.
I saw like a little poster for that or something. Like,
yeah, oh, it's when they get away from, you know, doing what they started doing, like practical effects and like just really like low budget. I mean,
yeah.
this is low budget, but in a different way, and just low budget modern films are just, they're not fun.
It's so weird that, you know, you had like the people who made like Sharknado and all those movies originally, you know, ripping off all these, you know, bigger budget, well-known horror movies. Now you have this whole like group of filmmakers ripping off those ripoffs.
Yeah.
Like with this sharks in the corn shit.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. We're in an awkward time. So just go backwards, folks. Watch older stuff and don't have to worry about stuff like Sharks of the Corn.
Like if you want to watch something, you know, bad but entertaining, just watch all the actual Children of the Corn sequels.
Exactly. I've watched all of them.
I remember you doing that.
Part 3. I vouch for Part 3. I will die on that hill.
I love The Final Sacrifice. I love Part 2.
Is Part 3 the one where the cornfield just pops up behind the guy's house?
Oh, yeah. They're in Chicago. That kind of thing.
Urban Harvest.
That one's fucking great. It's got a great monster at the end. Children of Corn 3, folks. Best of the series. Lance thinks it's Part 2, but yeah. Well, I'll give it to the old lady who gets like chucked in a wheelchair through the window. That's fun.
Yeah.
In that one.
That one just holds, because I remember seeing that one at the theater when I was young. Mm-hmm. I snuck into that and got into that one. Yeah. Final Sacrifice.
Okay.
It sounds like a good like final wrestling move. This is the final sacrifice.
Okay. All right. So normally here we would be going to you, Lance, and talking about your next pick, but we actually have 5 Tuesdays in June, which means we have space for an extra episode. So we're going to throw in a bonus episode before we get to Lance's pick. And that bonus episode, we're going to be doing another Blu-ray wishlist episode.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a guest, Dustin from the Genre Exposure podcast, joining us. And he's also going to share 5 picks. And just as an update from our last Blu-ray wishlist episode, we actually had one of our picks from that episode that has since gotten a Blu-ray release. That's Evil Dead Trap. That was one of John's picks.
Did I pick Nightflyer? I feel like Nightflyer was released too.
Did it?
I don't know. I don't know. I feel like most of them are getting released a lot.
Well, we're going to put more out into the world that we hope gets some kind of restoration, because none of my picks got one yet. Like no one.
And that makes sense. Shut up.
Cannibal Mercenary, come on. That movie is amazing.
Cannibal Mercenary?
Oh, yeah. It's a Thai non-exploitation film that for the first half, it's just like army guys going through and they're on a rescue mission. And you're like, is this going to be a cannibal movie or not? Yes, eventually it gets there. And there's like plenty of like gruesome cannibal stuff going on. There's people.
Is it on your list? Is it avenue?
There's no child killing it because the kid lives. Whatever. She had polio, though. I'm like, what's polio at this time? But people get peed on in it, but you can barely see it because the copy is so terrible.
Okay.
I also didn't get My Brother Has Bad Dreams, which I'm still just like, the director is still alive. I don't understand why I can't get a proper release of that because
it's coming.
I don't know. Well, I'm going to put 5 more out into the universe and hopefully something gets a restoration one of these days. We'll see what happens. So that's going to be our next episode. And then we'll be following that up with Lance's next pick after that.
You don't want to miss that.
You don't even know what it is yet.
I don't even know. But they're always good, right?
Yes. I support all of your picks, Lance, except for Bloodsucking Pharaohs in Pittsburgh.
So much fun.
That's a weird movie.
That's good. Tom Savini, baby.
Not worth it. All right. If you are not already, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at Unsung Horrors. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Hex Massacre.
You can find me on Letterboxd, Twitter, and Instagram at L Scheibe.
And Bat City has Instagram?
Instagram and Facebook. It's just Bat City Cinema. Then I guess if you want to follow me personally on Instagram, it's Klaus Kinski's Ghost.
Perfect.
That's a good name.
So we're going to put, yes, it is.
Good handle.
Love Klaus. So we're going to be putting links to where you can follow Ivan, where you can donate to AGFA, where you can get tickets to this double feature through Bat City Cinema, all of those things in show notes. So be sure to check those out. I went to it. I can vouch for it. I'm going again.
It's a week from today, right?
It is.
Yeah.
A week from Friday. Yeah. Week from yesterday.
Nice. Very excited for that.
Me too.
To see that again. Ivan, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thank you.
Thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you back next episode for another Blu-ray wishlist.
Bye.
Bam bam, mon ça se passe, j'ai sur mon lit à bouffer ça en buvant trop mon whisky. Quant à moi, peu dormi, vie débris, mais j'ai dû dormir dans la gouttière où j'ai eu un flash. En 4 couleurs. Allez hop, un matin, une douleur. sous l'hôtel de chez moi. Poupée de cellophane, cheveux chinois. Un sparadrap, une gueule de bois. A bu ma bière dans un grand verre en caoutchouc. Comme un indien dans son igloo. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Moi, 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 moi. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Allez hop, la nana, quel panard, quelle vibration de s'envoyer sur paillasson. Limé, ruiné, vidé, comblé. You are the king of the divan. Qu'elle me dit en passant. The king of the divan. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Moi, 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 moi. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Allez hop, t'occupe, t'inquiète, touche pas ma planète. It's not today que le ciel me tombera sur la tête. Et que la colle me manquera. C'est marre à tout casser, l'évier, le bar me laissant seul. Comme un grand connard. Le pied dans le plat. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour moi. Moi, 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 moi. Ça plane pour moi.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.